Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
I had the misfortune of watching Saturday Morning Kitchen last week. It was the Jubilee weekend, whenever that was. I woke up and the TV was on. We were in London with the children, being jubilant, seeing the Queen's Jubilees. And, is it Saturday or Sunday Morning Kitchen? I think it's Saturday.
I don't know. I never watch it.
I have no interest in it at all. At all. And I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way of trying to interview someone whilst they're attempting to make food that's palatable. And I thought, Saturday Morning Cambelt.
Oh.
Got to do a Cambelt change with a celebrity whilst maintaining some sort of sanity, focus, concentration. So, for example, you got Adele and you got Gordon Ramsay. You know, these sorts of people, heavy hitters of the famous person world.
I think you'd find out something about a person that you wouldn't otherwise be aware of. You know, if Adele is up to her elbows in the engine bay of, I don't know, an MX-5 or something, they're cam belt or cam chain, can't remember. They're cam belt.
I think they're belt.
But then she looks around at, who's doing it? James Martin, is he the presenter still? It doesn't really matter.
He wasn't when I was on it. No, it doesn't matter. It's probably, well, I'd like to see James Martin do a cam belt, but that's another story.
But then Adele just turns around and goes, of course, it's a non-interference engine. And you'd go, didn't know Adele knew that. That's quite interesting, isn't it? It's good. You see, sort of, you're learning something about her as a person, as well as
absolutely,
you know, her talking about music. But are you going to then, is it going to be a different car every week?
Yeah, it's someone in their, it's a friend or a family's car that they've brought in. So they do a little, round robin first. You go, is anyone's car well overdue on a Cambelt service? Okay. Actually, Harry Styles, Nan's Clio, I think is a bit threadbare. Can you bring it in? So Harry Styles brings in Nan's Clio and, you know, it's living on bought time Cambelt-wise. And he's doing it. He does it whilst he's talking about his new album. And probably wearing a really loose-fitting sort of flouncy shirt, which you mustn't start the car near under any circumstances.
Is this why? So one week they have on, I don't know, I'll try to think who would turn up wearing a collar and tie with no jacket or jumper, like Richard Ayoade or someone.
Oh, gosh, he'd be very sharply dressed, yes.
And they just go, ooh. Might want to tuck the tie into your shirt front there, Richard. Because or ska bands. The drummer from a ska band.
Oh, Green Day. If Green Day came in.
Green Day are on. They're on the comeback trail. Did they go away? I don't know. But anyway, one of them's wearing a tie.
And yeah. Oof.
Now, before you really dive into this cavalier that we've got in the workshop today.
Green Day Cambelt cavaliering.
Just take the Cambelt off. But then it's fine. And then they get chatting, and you know what? Because you know, James, that in the US, a Cavalier is a slightly different car, and on they go. But
that's right.
I'm wondering also.
I feel like it could work already.
Are you going to tailor it though, rather than have them bring in a family member's car? Because there's a lot of organisation there, and you know what celebrities are like. They'll turn up and they'll have forgotten it.
So that's true. That's true.
I think maybe just the show provides the car, but it is legit. They're basically running a business of cam belt changes, so they can't mess it up.
Okay,
but you can also tailor it to how confident the guest is about their mechanical ability. So if they're like, no, honestly, I've done loads of cam belts. Have you really, Kylie? Well, that's great then, because she actually used to play a mechanic, didn't she, on telly? Am I thinking of Holly Valance?
No, you're thinking of Kylie, and she used to have an Austin Mini called Willie.
Oh. What, in real life or on the show?
I think it was on the show only, but it'd be great if it was in real life as well.
Well, so I'm thinking that if someone says they're very confident, then you give them a slightly more challenging job.
Yes.
A tighter engine bay, you know, a Corsa or something, which needs, I think they need like 40,000 mile cam belt changes. So
do they?
The chance, yeah, they've that those courses, old courses, they need weirdly regular cam belt changes.
I wouldn't stand for it.
No. Tight engine bay, because it's a small car.
Yeah.
And if it's a bit leggy, that belt's been done before. And I'd be a bit worried that, you know, some of the bolts and things are getting a bit rounded off and it's going to be a challenging job. But see, that's okay. Because, as it turns out, Fiona Bruce, for example, is actually quite a skilled spanner person.
Yes, got thin wrists. She can get down the side of very tight engine bays, which does help.
Whereas the next week they've got, who's that guy who was in Game of Thrones? Jason something? He's freaking
Momoa, him?
Yes. Mm. Huge. Now, you cannot ask him to pop the bonnet on a early Vauxhall Adam and get up to his forearms trying to loosen off the lower pulley on that engine, because he will get stuck.
I'm just
thinking,
if
Momoa gets stuck with an Adam halfway up his arm, he's actually just going to stand up and the Adam is going to get flicked across the workshop.
It's like a tea towel. Yeah, like a sort of koi carp trying to suck up kids' fingers. They'll thrash it around and fling it off. You know, there's always a video on I don't know, YouTube or something like that. What about a car which requires... I know what I'd love to do. I just thought about it. I would make sure that James Martin was presenting, and he'd gone to an awards do the night before. He'd had a big family event, and so he was very fragile and hungover. Mm. And I'd make sure it was an engine out cam belt to do, lots of pieces to camera. And also the studio's hot and the fans have stopped working. So what would it be? Would it be like a fated W12?
Just before they go live, he's gone to someone on production. He's got, look, can I just have get a bottle of water? Get the bottle of water. Gone, James, the fridge is broken. Unfortunately, all the water is lukewarm. And he's just, oh, and also we accidentally put some salt in it. Sorry.
it's brine. Would you like a cup of brine before we start, James?
Sorry, we haven't got any water. We've only got this lukewarm stock that we were keeping for some reason. We keep doing it accidentally because we forgot it's not a cooking show anymore. So get it down, you son. Lovely, lovely pint of OXO beef. That'll slake your thirst.
Yeah, that'll slake your thirst if you're a sea bass. Yeah.
And so, he's feeling absolutely rancid and he's having to help Dame Judy Dench work an engine crane.
Yeah. And what car what is it? Well, surely one of those W12 engines. I think they're an engine out. Oh, bloody
hell.
Job.
And so heavy.
Yeah.
You cannot muck around when one of those is waving in the wind from the rain.
Well, it's still in.
Imagine just the plumbing, the unhooking of stuff. This is going to have to be like a day-long special.
Oh, so much wiring loom to unclip and make sure it's out the way. And
is it Phaeton? Or I'm going to say it's a very early Continental GT, because I have a feeling that the engine access on that, like as in terms of the bonnet aperture,
tight.
Tight.
Okay, so James has got a fairly leggy Conti GT.
Mm.
It's hot. And also, I want to make it clear that the Saturday morning kitchen looks the same. So it's still a kitchen, and there's still sort of nice plants in the background, and there's ladles hanging on the wall, you know, and uplighters. Yeah. But the car just sort of gets barged in, and they push the chairs out of the way, and then that's it. They start. So you could go over to the fridge and, I don't know, get a pot of hummus out halfway through if you wanted. There is that opportunity. But fundamentally, it's a chat whilst spannering on cars.
Well, you're also going to learn a lot about the guests. And one of the things is how confident they're feeling as a guest with going, can I just go over to the fridge and get a can of Diet Coke? No, we haven't got any. Got orange juice. Do you want some orange juice? Yeah, go on. Right, well, yeah, thanks. Oh, we haven't got any clean glasses. You're all having it from a mug. James Martin's badly organised kitchen, because he's been on the sauce again and he forgot to set the dishwasher going.
I forgot to reset the kitchen before and have the clean down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have a cleaner. He's got to do it himself every week. And the floor, the tiles are going to be ruined by, for example, a 2-ton luxury coupe being rolled onto them. And then a lot of dripping, a lot of fluids.
There's an awful lot of Yeah, auto box fluid, which, as you know, smells like Tomcat piss, but also is very, very thin. So if you, if Dame Judi Dench walks in and she's wearing heels, she's going to break both of her ankles within seconds or look like Bambi on ice.
I'm going to say this is not Dame Judy's first cam change, and she is wearing steel toe cap boots.
Yeah, I agree.
Just on the safe side.
I agree.
Because there's always a possibility that, you know, I wonder if, like, to get the engine out first, you've got to take off some ancillaries. And, again, it's not the first time she's dropped an alternator on her foot, so she's taking no chances.
Yeah. Well, that's the small talk. In fact, the more I think about it, you know, I get a bit upset with the whole I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, using insects and reptiles as sort of sacrificial playthings. I find that a little bit offensive. Because if I was to do that show and say and suggest using, I don't know, rescue dogs, I would get shut down and never work again. But it's absolutely fine if it's just a pit of snakes, or
Johnny Smith's gorilla rescue dog.
Yeah.
Tonight on ITV.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not going to it's not going to fly, is it? So I think it should be I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here, and in brackets, okay then, change the cam belt on this and you can. So
this is probably why you aren't and never will be the director of programmes for ITV or BBC, because too many cam belt based shows.
Do you think so? Well, I would only pick one. It would either be Saturday morning cam belt chat.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, or it would be... Yeah, because I think to myself, if I was going to do a cam belt, I'd want to set myself up in a nice environment first. Warm room, maybe an omelette with a strong coffee, and then let's set to work. I'm all right with that.
I can see this, and I think it's got legs. And I would like to see Benedict Cumberbatch wrestling a recalcitrant belt on an aging Rover 200 as much as the next man.
Oh, that would be brilliant. That would be great. And chains, obviously, chains are allowed. It's not just belts. We would allow chains.
Well, I mean, if some guest says, look, I am not mechanically confident and I just don't think I could do the cam belt, particularly because I've heard that James is often no help whatsoever, having an absolutely hanging headache. So could I just drop the oil? And you go, okay.
Yeah.
But we're not going to make it too easy for you, so we're going to do something that's a bit fiddly. I don't know what that would be, like an MGF or something. It's just you've got restricted access from the top.
Oh yeah, MR2.
Do as much as you can from the. Yes, just something that we go. Yeah, you can. But the sump plug is really stuck.
I had that on my Insight, and it's a magnesium sump. I was terrified of it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah, I know. I didn't have James Martin to help me, unfortunately. Sump. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, I know. And apparently you can't buy them. So if you ruin it, you're snookered. So it's a slight bit of pressure. And James Martin
was there. Why do you
think
they made it from magnesium?
I'm guessing it was there. It's just sheer lightness. It has to be. Because that car was all about unsprung weight, wasn't it? So it was...
So they've gone the optimum lightness versus strength led them to magnesium, I would guess. But, I mean, that says a lot about that car.
Yeah.
Where they just, no expense spared, surely.
Well, no, because you can't even see it. It's under a load of plastic aero under trays. You have to take three trays off to see it.
Yeah, but if you're a Honda engineer, you know that's there. And that's the thing.
Mm. That's why... That's
very
why
proud of their sump.
That's why I love it even more than ever on that side of things. I'm just thinking now, next time I'll invite James Martin round and he can have four pipettes of room temperature water before we get cracking.
You're going to maybe, you know those things that hamsters have? Those
the little ball bearing suckle wheel, a suckle bottle.
You've got a big one of those, or maybe not, maybe just a sort of, you know, guinea pig sized one on the wall, and James is allowed to just lap at it like a rodent. But it's lukewarm.
I'd love to see that. I think that'd be brilliant. Now that's almost different now because we're sort of, it's sort of like Sunday morning hangover kitchen.
I know. We're not suggesting that James Martin gets absolutely battered every Saturday night and then attempts to present TV shows. That we're not saying that.
No,
it's just amusing to imagine that if someone were in that position where they had to front a live Sunday morning TV show, that it was incompatible with their love of going out on a Saturday night and having 19 pints of Carling.
I have to say, I have presented an item on a TV show criminally hungover before. It's just
well, tell us which item and which TV show it was, and then perhaps it's on YouTube and we can try and work out the point at which your brain starts to collapse in on it.
Oh, it was awful, and it was really hot. It was an incredibly hot launch of a Honda Civic in Spain, and it was the night before, let me get this right. Yeah, the night before, the hotel was really lovely, and we all decided, because it was close to the end of the series, we'll just have a couple of... They had this amazing cocktail bar, which has been plied on us. You can smell the danger from here, can't you?
Mm.
And we had filmed some of it already, like the drive of the car we'd already filmed, but we hadn't done the intro, and I don't think we'd done the outro, and we hadn't done a couple of other parts. And we all had a little bit too much. And worst of all, the lead cameraman, I won't name him, who set the camera up, and then the director said action, and as I was talking down the barrel of the camera, he tiptoed off and threw up behind an ornamental bush. And then I can actually see him wiping his chin and coming back, and I'm thinking, how am I supposed to do a really natural like piece to camera when I've got him just chundering? And this was an immaculate hotel garden, a really beautifully manicured. We did it on the premises. So and that. I made a point of not doing that because I knew I can't operate on a hangover. I can't, and it's only got worse. Unfortunately,
I went on the Jaguar XF launch, the original one,
2012. Was it?
No, it would have been like 2008 or something like that, I think.
Or was it
quite a while ago? And there was quite a giddy evening in the hotel bar.
Oh, giddy.
And the next morning, we had some more driving of the car to do. Not filming it, just driving it to write about. And I was sharing a car with another well-known journalist who I've known for a while. And he was driving. As we set off from the hotel, he went... Because we both went, oh, dear, feeling a bit rubbish today. And then as we set off, he went, I warn you now, I'm going to conduct this very gently. And I was like, I appreciate that. Thank you. Good. That's how I would like it to go as well. No helmsmanship here, please.
No.
Just need to get safely round.
No.
And then have an enormous barrel of water at the lunch stop. And we drove up. It was in the south of France. And we drove up into the mountains. We were just going up these mountains. So inevitably, they're a bit twisty. And we hadn't been going very long when he just went, I'm just going to pull over. He pulled rather urgently into a lay-by and then just got out of the car, ran behind a bush and puked up.
Oh, awful.
Awful. And then he said he felt much better. So, you know, it's not all bad.
But, I think as long as you've got access to water, it's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, when people wonder where the inspiration for the car journalist Roy Lanchester, as I sometimes write, where it comes from, well, it comes from real life, is the answer.
Yeah, that's right. It's not fake at all.
No.
It's not even satirical.
I think it is a bit more... part of the thing with Roy now is that he doesn't fit in. He's completely out of step with the way things are, because I have noticed, not that I go on many car events anymore, but I have noticed that often now people don't go to the bar as soon as they get back to the hotel or whatever. They go to their room to go and write up their reports.
Yeah, they do.
For the online version of whoever they work for. Or they've shot video, probably shot video as well, and they go upstairs to edit it. And there is no sort of just propping up the bar talking shite for 7 hours until
you
fall over, because you've got work to do still.
And I sort of miss it in one way, and I understand it's the new way of journalism. Traditionally, you would go on a car launch, wouldn't you? And you'd make notes as you drove the car, and then you'd come back and you'd put your notebook in your bag, and you'd have a large dinner, multi-course, multi-courses of booze, and then you'd wake up really late the next day. you probably wouldn't get an early flight because you don't really need to because there's no urgency in the world at that moment in time. Yeah. And so you go, oh, well, the flight isn't till 7 p.m. That's cool. This area is really good. I'm going to go for a walkabout, maybe go for some shops, or I'll do a few emails on a veranda, enjoying yes. some freshly cut fruit and a coffee.
A really good foreign coffee of some sort.
Foreign
coffee.
Because
you're in a country that does good coffee, yeah.
You will. And squeezed orange juice using that machine that I might have referred to before that I can't remember the name of, that you stack it full of oranges and it looks really impressive. Yeah, that.
I've always wanted to put a tennis ball in one of those just amongst the oranges to see what would happen. I imagine nothing, but...
What about a beef tomato?
Explode. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that could work in a world of slightly sour smoothies that are better for your guts.
Well, apparently. Maybe that's it. You in your random orange juice world, you've just put little rogue other fruit and vegetables in there. There's a potato in there somewhere. And as you're operating the machine, it's kind of potluck what you actually get. Some people will just get pure orange juice. Some people will get an orange and onion smoothie of some sort. Yeah, it's a parsnip in there somehow.
Onion
which
smoothie.
Which jams the mechanism.
You can't do
I think
that.
If you squeezed an onion hard enough, I think that some juice would come out.
I know it would, but it would, unfortunately, it would smell like decorator's armpits, wouldn't it? I think it would be... Oh.
Yes, it would be revolting, yeah.
I've just remembered, during the Queen's Jubilee weekend, I don't know if I mentioned, I watched some live jousting. And my daughter said to me, when I was trying to explain what jousting was about, and obviously it was a thing that you did back in the days of old.
Back in the day.
Back in the day and all that. Back in the day. I love it when people say back in the day, and they're referring to 8 years ago. But... But
you're also referring to several hundred years ago, which feels like it's too far away.
That is probably, it is several centuries ago. But back in the day, jousting-wise, my daughter was listening to me describe it, and she said, so is it a bit like sort of drag racing or, like motor racing? I said, well, I suppose in a way it is. It's like it's a stunt, it's dangerous, which is why it's a spectacle and people find it exciting. And back then, of course, pre-cars, if you had the biggest, fastest horse or the strongest horse, that only added to your prowess, didn't it?
Mm.
And the horses had these amazing, I'm going to call them body kits, because they had...
the oldie Zendery.
That's right. It was a Liberty Walk... it had this amazing, what looks like, I don't know, a dressing gown on that's been cut out with lots of elaborate colours, and the horse's eyes are partially covered. And I just thought, hang on a minute, they're body kitted horses. The lance, exceptionally long. And then they were describing what they were doing, because they were actually doing it. They were saying how the visibility...
They were actually doing it,
full pelt, and breaking the lances.
Oh, I see. So the lances were... I mean...
They're designed to break off,
historical
I think.
Ignorance, but in ye olding back in the days...
Yeah.
They presumably were not designed to break, and designed to actually hurt
drive
someone
through.
Quite badly.
Yes, yeah. I think that's right. So these ones... and also, I don't know whether old lances were metal-tipped wood... Whereas these were quite easily splinterable soft wood.
Mm.
So you'd ride at your opponent. But the thing is because you're wearing that metal protective helmet, which had such a thin slit of visibility in it, you couldn't really see. You couldn't see your horse and you couldn't really see your lance. So it's a bit like, I'm going to say... Have you ever put a welding mask on before you've actually started welding? You can't see anything. And then you go, well, what's the alternative? The alternative is not having a welding mask on. You can see everything. But at the moment you click the welder and start the weld, you've got to obviously shut your eyes because you've committed, but it's too dangerously bright. So during the actual act of the moment that's crucial, you can't really see. And that's the same as jousting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't really thought about this because I'll be honest, I've never done any welding.
What about jousting?
Things that, Oh yeah, loads of that. Mm. I was just doing it this morning before
you?
We started. But yeah, I just go out for a quick joust. And thinking about it, pro welders, they do. It's a very quick two-step, isn't it?
It's very quick.
Flip down, go.
Yep.
And you never just sort of flip down and then blither about for a bit before you start the torch.
No, and it's like all these skills. You don't realise how incredible it is until you try it yourself and you go, bloody hell, this is it's actually quite hard. It's a bit of a fiddle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to make it look artistic is quite something. That goes for any.
You made me feel like a charlatan because I have never done any welding, but I do really admire a nice weld. And equally, I find bad welds offensive.
Bad welds are quite offensive. Now, don't get me wrong, Richard. I'm not going to sit on this podcast and claim that I weld every weekend because I sure as hell don't.
You've got all that jousting to do, haven't you?
I've got way too much. I've gone in hard on the jousting, yeah. You know, like middle-aged men who've gone hard on the cycling thing. And
yes,
they've got all the carbon, yet they're still overweight, which I still don't understand. I'd rather have a slower, heavier bike and get fitter quicker. But anyway, instead of doing all that, I've gone the other way. I thought, no, I'm going to go jousting. So I've got myself a body-kitted horse.
A really pro-spec horse as well.
It's low. It's low to the ground. It's because I couldn't afford a tall, fast one. So I've gone for a low, slower one just to get me started. And so lower ground clearance, so the skirts drag a little bit. You know, it's like
a bit ground effect, though, isn't it? It's probably quite good handling.
Yeah.
Although I suppose they're dragsters, aren't they? Because they are straight liners, those horses.
They are.
Cornering horses.
No, they're not. They're just, and it's, you have to start as soon as the person shouts, so I can't remember what they shout. Of course, you have to go at the same time. It's
contenders ready.
Yes.
You will go on my first whistle.
Horses, you will go on my first whistle. Yeah, and honestly.
Jousters, you will also go on my first whistle because you're sitting on the horse.
That's right, and that's the way it is. Yeah, I've got in my head I started chuckling because obviously they have different shields, big, like a really protective shield. They have different coats of arms stitched into the cloaks and the horse's gear. And I was thinking, yeah, it would be quite cool to have some modern sponsors' name, like, I don't know, Gazoo Racing and MSD.
Well,
and
you could do like the drift people do and just sort of do the big list down the side of the horse.
That's right. That's
things that have got into the horse, but I guess it would just say like carrots, straw, horse nose medicine of some sort.
Nose bag meds.
Well, I don't know what else you do with horse. Maybe the name of the vet and that sort of thing, you know, and the shoes. Whoever's shooed the horse.
Shooed them up, yeah.
The farrier gets a name check on the side.
Whoever was the cloak stitcher who's done the threads on the horse. Is it a coat? I don't know if it's a horse's coat. It looks more elaborate than a coat. But,
I don't know. I don't know very much about horses.
Listeners will know, and hopefully listeners haven't switched off yet. And I realise when we're talking about Saturday morning kitchen, if you don't live in the UK, you might not know what the hell we're talking about, but it's a British morning chat show based around cooking with somebody.
As always with these things, if they're a little inexplicable, there are additional bits of information, notes, links, pictures that we always put on our Patreon, particularly for people overseas. Now, a lot of people who are patrons, I've heard said, and somebody was just mentioning this last week, they like to read the show notes before they've heard the show because then they have a sort of abstract, mysterious quality to them.
Oh.
And they'll go, why is there a picture of Fuello Benjamin? And it just, it gives them a sort of, you know, a sense of what might be coming.
Oh,
and yet at the same time, no sense whatsoever. And I hadn't really considered this until people started saying that's how they do it, because the show goes live for patrons on a Sunday evening along with the show notes, but I think a lot of people, it's part of their Monday morning routine. So I gather, this is what feedback tells us. So, but anyway, while we're here, because I was meaning to plug this, yes, we have a Patreon, I've just been talking about it. We don't ask a lot. You can just chuck in a quid a month if that's your thing. Any more is greatly appreciated. Any less, you're scum to us and we don't want anything. I'm joking. Of course we do. You're
exactly.
Lovely. But the Patreon helps us to keep going. So
And how else are we going to buy that veal-side body-kitted horse, jousting horse? It's with Patreon funds, of course.
Sugar lumps written down the side.
Exactly that.
And other things that horses apparently like in cartoons.
Polo mints.
I bet you're not supposed to give them sugar lumps in real life, are you? Probably bad for their teeth.
I don't know. Something. I think it depends on what their sort of power outlay is. If they're regularly exercised hard, it's a bit like if you're a gym bunny, probably having a Mars bar every day doesn't touch the sides because it's going straight up the chimney and being burnt, isn't it? So
you know those pictures in men's magazines, like particularly sort of like Men's Health and things, they'll always have someone with a really amazing six-pack on the front.
Yes.
Or certainly within the pages.
Yeah.
And I know someone who went through some kind of, like not a competition, but there was some kind of challenge to get a six-pack. And he was in fairly good shape, but he was just sort of, you know, middle-aged dad bod kind of okay shape. Like,
yeah.
he wasn't cover of a magazine worthy. And there was some sort of challenge where he went through this regime of exercise and diet to get an amazing six-pack.
Yeah.
And he achieved it. And then I think the prize, whatever it was to have your photo, you know, have a photo shoot.
Gosh.
And just before the photos were taken, he had a massive McDonald's, because apparently the last thing you'd want to do to really bring your six-pack out is to have a very heavy, big meal, and that pushes something or other.
Seriously?
And gets that final... Yeah. So you've spent weeks and months eating very, very healthily, and then if you want to pose with your six-pack at its most sort of prominent...
You bloat.
Yeah, you bloat. I'm sure that's what he told me.
I can't believe
that.
He
said, I went and got a McDonald's. And he was like, it felt disgusting, but that was what I was told to do by the photographer, the stylist, or whatever.
Bloody hell, that's the last thing I was expecting you to say.
It's weird, isn't it?
I'll remember that just before I go on the beach in a few months' time.
Yeah, I think it only works if you've done a very intense six-pack building routine. I don't think it works if you're just
a
normal middle-aged bloke.
What, isn't it? What, that hasn't done any exercise since lockdown and is going to have a Magnum every other hour on the beach?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't mean a Magnum of champagne. I mean just an ice lolly.
Yes. Popular grown-up lollipop.
Yes, that's
right. So... Now, I want to start a new and one-off feature on this show called I'm a Bit Worried About.
Oh.
And I want your advice on this, because I'm a bit worried about my cars. I mentioned in the past couple of shows I've just moved house, and I'm now parking both my cars on quite a steep slope. And
right.
It's worrying me that it's not good for the cars.
Right. Oh, hang on. Is this your phobia of automatic cars being on the pin, as you said it was when they're in park?
On the pawl, if you will.
Yes. Okay.
But this is the thing. So when I get into the Range Rover, let's go first. Now, it's got an electric handbrake.
Yeah, which is...
And it's an automatic.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, electric handbrakes, it's you know, you're sort of at the mercy of what the system has decided. You can't sort of pull them on extra hard like an old-fashioned one.
No.
They're just there. Now, I don't actually know how they calibrate themselves and adjust. I don't know if they even do.
I've seen them.
I think they do. They do adjust for wear, don't they?
They do.
They are able to compensate.
They have little wheels, like pulley wheels. And
they do, don't they? Because that's the noise you hear when you pull them on. They just go...
And the problem is...
the wheel
is they...
winding the cable.
Yeah, from memory, they're in a really vulnerable spot for just getting covered in mud and gunk. And then, of course, they start to seize and dry. So what I would say is go on Google and type in, I don't know, Land Rover or Range Rover electric handbrake mechanism. You'll see one being demonstrated. Okay. And then what I would do, personally, it's so high off the ground, get some old clothes on, not some brand new Smith & Sniffner merch, because that's new, and then lie under your car on a warm day when the car is all warm. Clean off around the area of the electric handbrake, assuming it's not covered in, you know, you haven't just done an off-road day or a joust event. And spray all that area with some sort of anti-corrosive protectant fluid, because I think the dryness is what kills them often.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Like all this
stuff. I'm not so worried about the handbrake at the moment as such. It's holding the car. Well, I think it's holding the car. I haven't actually tried it. I should put it in neutral and see what happens. But what bothers me most is no matter which way round I park, when I put the car into gear, it's suddenly sort of like a bit of a
thunk. It bangs. Yes, it does,
And I don't like it.
No.
And the up does it as well. The up does it to a lesser degree, but it's still there. And the up creaks almightily as you hold it on the foot brake. It's just the brakes making brake noises.
Electric cars often do that.
It's very pronounced. I think it's also because I'm often parked against a wall and it's somehow, it's reflecting the sound back. But I did it the other day with the window open and went, bloody hell, it's creaky. I just don't like it. I don't like parking cars repeatedly on a quite steep slope. It feels like it's bad for them.
Well, I'm going to say you don't need a handbrake in an auto anyway. It's just a waste of time.
But come on. No.
No, it's locked. The gearbox is locked.
I know, but it's stressing my Paul.
It is stressing the Paul. Nepal. What I would say is, are you facing down the hill or facing up the hill?
A bit of both, actually.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't know if it makes any difference, but I would probably face up the hill so that when it goes into reverse or D, it just feels... And also always select it when obviously your foot is heavily on the brake.
Oh, heavily.
Heavily on the brake to take up any amount of slack. But I think that's really your only option. I mean, what people in San Francisco do is they put their wheels on full lock and then they nudge the tyre into the curb, and then that way it probably takes the pressure off the transmission, the locked trans, which means when you put it into reverse or D in the morning or whenever you go back to it, it's not going to have that mechanical shunt effect because it isn't, gravity isn't trying to pull it one way or the other. Exactly.
Yeah. It's not really an option because this is a driveway. That's the only problem. And what I only noticed,
bought the wrong driveway.
Well, it kind of came free attached to the house.
You stroker.
I mean, I could have it levelled off and some elaborate system of lifts like the Anderson boat lock, but I think it might.
Could you have
of an expense?
Can you have a funicular driveway system?
It's still going to. Oh, I see what you mean. Like, so that where those railways, the carriage sits flat, doesn't it?
The carriage sits flat, but it goes down the gradient using pulley system and a load of water.
Yes,
which I absolutely love. I love a funicular railway.
If I skip vernacular a weekend of jousting, I could probably knock that up. And, and as long as it can take the weight of a Range Rover, it'll be all right.
But, anyway,
it's bothering me. I just wanted to pick your brain because you're mechanically more knowledgeable than I am, but it bothers me. I'm sure listeners will have their own views on this. But you're right, it did cross my mind. Funny you should mention San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking that. I was like, people live in San Francisco, they park their cars on hills for years and years and years, and you do not hear... Although, in fairness, I don't think I know any San Franciscans. You don't hear people going, my car's gone wrong again. For God's sake, these bloody hells.
Yeah. But, have you got any manual cars?
The Land Rover, but it's in storage at the moment. I'm going to bring it home quite soon.
Okay, so in that instance, I would say it's a manual car will have a harder time of it because obviously you're doing a hill start when the engine's stone cold. And that will stress the clutch anyway because you're having to ride it harder.
But it's downhill, so the driver's down onto the road, so it's actually the stressy bit. And this again, this.
Okay.
I had to back the Range Rover onto the drive the other day to load some stuff into the boot, and there's just that feeling of it's really having to suddenly
load
sort
up
of work.
The torque converter.
Yeah, it's the torque converter. I was like, something feels like it could burst here, but. It's okay. I mean, it's got plenty of torque. And
I was going to say it's used to carrying three tons or something, or a lot of jousting gear. or...
I'm probably being overly cautious here. It's just that I do have quite a lot of mechanical sympathy, and...
I understand that.
I just don't like it.
Oh, it's kind of sweet, Richard. It's kind of sweet.
Well, I care.
I know you care.
I care about my cars.
I don't. Well, so, it's the same as me pushing cars out of the garage or up, I don't know, from one end of the drive to the other, if rather than driving it, rather than starting it cold. I just don't want to. I don't want to start a car up for 10 seconds.
I even thought that about starting the Range Rover because it's petrol.
Yeah.
It's fine with the app because it's electric, but I starting the internal combustion car on a slope, it's just like, oh, you see, all the oil's run to one end, hasn't it?
Drive of yours? I'm getting a bit worried. Do you live on a slip, an RNLI slipway?
Yeah. What? Yeah, yeah. We've got to get those boats parked to one side
because when there's an emergency, the boat will just clout your car into the ocean.
It's coming out of the garage, whether you like it or not. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Or when someone puts a coin in the top of the garage roof. That's a very obscure reference, I think.
Coin in the roof.
Bloody hell. Yeah, anyway, so that's the thing that's worrying me this week. It's just parking on a slope. All input from listeners greatly appreciated on this one. The title of your email: I parked my Mazda MX-6 on a slope for 7 years and then the wheels fell off.
It was just fine. Yeah.
Yes, it was just fine. That's more what I'd want to hear.
Just don't overuse the handbrake. That's what I'd say. Just fear the handbrake.
I just don't fear it. In an automatic car, not an electric car, but in an automatic internal combustion car, would you typically not use the handbrake?
Yes. Unless I'm parking it on a really steep slope, yeah.
Are you some kind of American?
I only use it, the same as air conditioning, I only check it to see if it actually works when the car's being MOT'd. I just want to check the
detection. Why would you not just use it because it's an extra bit of security in case something goes wrong?
Because the transmission is physically locked. The only time the car will move is if someone hits it at 60 miles an hour and it skids across the road with its locked wheels still locked, and then it's trashed anyway. So who cares?
The
handbrake's pointless in an auto. It's completely pointless.
See, my wife never used to use the handbrake in an auto, and I basically...
You made her.
British ways, I
guess. You did.
I tested her. Yeah, she does use the handbrake.
You de-Americanized her, that element of her life.
Well, it might have been when we had the 911, because obviously that's not really an automatic. It's a double-clutch manual.
Not the same, I don't think.
I don't know how it locks itself. I know it does, but I don't know how it locks itself exactly. I imagine it is something similar. There's some kind of pin.
There's a robotic arm underneath with a twig in a hand. And as you press the electric handbrake button, the twig goes into one of the spokes of the Lois, and then that's it.
I think that was earlier cars. I think there's a robotic arm that just gently lowers a house brick in front of one of the back wheels.
Oh, yes.
That's how it stays put. That's what I was going to say. I just noticed only yesterday that just up tucked by the garage wall, there are two house bricks, and I thought, I know why they're there. The previous owner of the house used those to chock his car in place, didn't he?
Do you know what? I love a house brick. I've got a couple lying around, or a couple of
you've got hundreds of them.
Yeah,
holding your house up, surely.
Well, yeah, but
a freelance house brick that's not being used to be part of a house.
That's right. And I used to have a selection of wood battens. Because of that reason of chocking vehicles, and also I used to drive around in a car that was so low, I couldn't physically get a jack under it, so I'd have to push it or reverse it onto a selection of wooden battens and then get a trolley jack under it, because I'm a complete bell cheese. But anyway, so
tonight in session, Transmission Paul playing tracks off their new album Selection of Battens.
well, it's different times, as they say. And I enjoyed my time with the car that was so low that I couldn't get anything underneath it.
Hang on, which one was this?
This was the Mark 1 Granada, pre-hydraulics.
Oh, pre-hydraulics?
Pre-hydraulics. It was just absolutely on its arse. And I used to drive it every day to work.
The Mark 1 Granada.
And it was so low. When I had two friends in the back and I overtook a car on the dual carriageway, it did actually scrape cat's eyes off the middle of the road, and my dad saw how low it was, and he just said, I don't understand how you think you're going to drive this around normally. And sure enough, the wisdom of a parent, as me being a 19-year-old penis, I drove back up north to work, and I said, yeah, I've got, there's only certain routes I can come into the city now. And he went, yeah, it's kind of what I was trying to tell you. So
there's only certain routes.
Yeah, honestly, there were certain parts. Yeah, I just couldn't drive it around many different roads.
Yeah. Good. Well, anyway, that's that one. But listen, yes, to sum up, if anyone's got some advice about parking on a hill, I suspect most of the advice will be stop worrying about it, you big fanny. But if anyone has got any particularly sage thoughts about hill parking, then that I'm all ears. And hello@smithandsniff.com is the email address. hello@smithandsniff.com. If you are a patron, you can get in touch with us through the Patreon page, patreon.com/smithandsniff, all in words. We were just talking before we started, weren't we, about how we haven't got a Twitter account because it seemed a bit unnecessary. And then I thought that maybe we should have one. And it turns out someone has already taken Smith and Sniff.
So whoever you are, we'll find you. And when we do...
Well, I think it's a squatter. I think it's just some...
Oh, do you?
...squatter that... Yeah.
Shall I challenge them to a joust?
Yes!
I will dig out my most aggressively body-kitted horse and I will summon them to a duel at dawn.
Where did you watch this jousting, by the way?
Just some tin pot place called Hampton Court Palace. And it was lovely. It was... very British, like a lot of the Jubilee weekend was. Hence, I mean, that's kind of the point. Yeah, but just took the kids for a tour of the palace, and they just happened to have a special jousting event on just to keep it nice and authentic and historic. And it was great.
Mm.
It was really, really good fun. And very, very enjoyable. Didn't see the Queen. But saw a lot of people sunburnt and a lot of bunting. Oh, and there was an enormous amount of pollen and dust in London that weekend, so everyone's eyes felt like someone had like been sprinkling dry roast peanut, but dry roast peanuts into them. It was really, I had very sore eyes for 2 days.
Well, it's what Her Majesty would have wanted. Did the rain not damp it down, though?
There was a small amount of rain, and they actually said we will have to cancel it if it's too wet because the horses can't get grip, because I think it's pre-traction control on those horses. So
yeah, but they're four-wheel drive. I mean, I don't...
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about it like that. Maybe their torsion and diff is a bit cag. I don't know. I always thought torsion and diff is just a Scandinavian bodybuilder. But, yeah,
this... I'm in a WhatsApp group with the three mates who are all sort of quite car nerdy, and we do have a running joke about writing a Scandinavian crime drama based around a guy called Torsten Diff.
Do you?
And he's always going to look at slightly shabby Lotus Elites and Eclats for sale, and they're never quite good enough. The headlining's always sagging.
Oh, always, always. Yeah. The interior's always threadbare.
Size.
Torsten Diff.
Next week I'll find a good one for sale. Crime's going unsolved because of his obsession with 1970s Lotuses and trying to buy a decent second-hand one. But it's a work in progress,
isn't it? I'm in there.
I just wanted to read out since I gave out the email address, I want to read out some emails that we've had. Matt Seymour wrote to us just because we mentioned last week you said you'd love to go and clean the Goodwood Festival of Speed site with a bottle of Terps.
Oh yeah. I remember
Matt
that.
Said I once spent 8 hours scrubbing the floor of York Minster with turpentine substitute. The result was to replace the strips of adhesive left behind by cheap gaffer tape someone else had laid, damn them, with two stripes of slightly cleaner floor area, which looked worse. So that's
really?
A salutary tale, yeah. But, I mean, 8 hours in York Minster scrubbing the floor, I suppose, a nice venue in which to have to do a very, very tedious task. Les Brooke, who's a draftsman, apparently, according to his signature, he says, "You're a fraud. Mr. I Never Use the Con quite blatantly does use it on Fifth Gear Series 27 Episode 1 while testing the electric London taxi. I rest my case."
Seriously? Seriously?
you're getting called out now on your air conditioning use.
Now, there needs to be a caveat in the con situation, and that is when we're filming, we can't really have the windows down because of sound intervention. And the camera gear overheats on a hot day.
Yes.
I have been forced to have the con on before, and I've actually been quite angry about it, even when I've been wearing a grey T-shirt with obvious sweat patches emerging. I've still only done it in the name of keeping the camera equipment rolling. So
right,
I love
right,
that. I mean, right, eagle-eyed right. listeners slash viewers, I mean, they will always be king. I'll always be fine. What series episode was that again?
Series 27, episode 1, apparently.
27, episode 1. Oh, shit, that wasn't that long ago. Okay.
No. Anyway, I feel like this is, as people seem to say on the internet quite a lot these days, you know, this is the hill I will die on, for some sort of yes. issue you have to take a stand on. You're very much now on air conditioning hill, or air conditioning switched off hill, and
yes.
people are taking shots at you, possibly coming at you with a jousting lance of air conditioning. There's a chap called Matthew Hammerfeld Joyce. I'm sorry if I've mispronounced your name, Matthew. He lives in Germany. He lives in Potsdam.
Okay.
And he says he's emailed us a couple of times because he's been spreading the word in Germany about this podcast. Thank you for that, Matthew. But he drove over to Brooklands for Jaguar's centenary in his lovely old XJR.
Oh, sweet.
X300, one of the straight six ones.
Yeah.
It looks absolutely mega. He sent us a picture. And
he's a dude.
Yeah.
Has to
total
be.
Dude. So he drove to Brooklands, and then there's a test hill. And he said, I listened with nervous anxiety as the Brooklands marshals told us that we didn't lift off the throttle at the flag, we would most likely end up in Weybridge. And when asked if my car was low, and I asked how low is low, he replied, give it a go and we'll see. So
I don't like that.
He set off. I know.
That's not the right attitude.
He set off up the hill, made it without a worry. But what's glorious about it is he did it with a big yellow Smith & Sniff sticker in the back window as his only nod to competition spec sponsorship.
Thank you so much. What a great... any German person that owns a slightly... left field British car, I'm always fascinated by anyway. I think it's cool. You're very much going against the grain.
Exactly.
You, sir, have taste.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I always think someone over here who's a massive BMW enthusiast and owns, say, an old M5, you'd just go, there's someone who's into BMWs. But it feels like in Germany, everybody's maybe a little bit more sort of committed to the home team, and to have a Jag is
very much
left
so.
Field. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Matthew can probably set us straight on this.
I think Germans have historically, and the French especially, and actually and the Spanish, are very good at being kind of patriotic car purchasing.
Yeah.
Whereas we don't anymore.
It's true. Well, we had our trust broken too many times.
Well, we did. And our local cars are Toyotas now. And
yeah. And Hondas, and
were Hondas,
Nissans, but just got a Japanese car.
Nissans,
blurting out. Matthew, anyway, he finishes by saying, suffice to say, given it rained all day, some water got in my electrics, and after a lengthy stay on the hard shoulder, I made it home.
Oh no, because of the acute angle.
I don't know.
I bet it was. I bet it was because it was parking at an acute angle and the sunroof let in some water and the ECU started choking.
Now, the reason I bring up Matthew, or Matt, he's signed his name actually, we'll call him Matt from now on, let's be friendly, but the reason I bring him up is actually because of last week's podcast when you went up that mountain.
Yeah,
that's named after a man who some kind of weird
Welsh it was
legend,
nude and wanted to marry a woman and had to hit a hammer on a log all night to stay warm. Yes, nothing weird about that.
Anyway, Matt's father-in-law owns an actual mountain.
What?
In Norway, called Hammerfall, which is one hell of a name for a mountain.
Oh my gosh.
Like a mountain. Yeah, what's it called? Hammerfall.
Oh, we need. Can we climb it? I mean, is it a tricky one, or is it a fairly easy listening event to climb?
Well, what's exciting is that Matt has said, if you send me the okay, I will secretly, and much to my mother-in-law's anger, rename it Johnny Hill or Smith & Sniff Mount. But in return, he will need one of those little stickers we were talking about getting made last week, which are happening.
Oh, yes, it is happening.
They were signed off a few days ago, and they are being made as we speak.
They're under construction.
If you see us at Goodwood, assuming we're still going to Goodwood, because we were a bit rude about Lord Sir March of Richmond last week, and but we haven't heard otherwise.
No, we weren't rude.
Well, it was done with affection.
Yeah.
Great respect for him and his event, but we just can't quite remember his name. And if you see us there, we'll have stickers on us and we'll give them away. Matt sent us a picture of Hammerfall, or at least a picture of the sign, which seems to be on a road. It's hard to make out which is actually the mountain, but it doesn't look massive. I reckon you could climb it. Anyway, if you offer stands,
I'd
Matt,
like
then,
to
yeah,
do
if
that.
I don't know how you go about renaming a mountain in Norway. If there's a lot of paperwork, don't go to any trouble.
Otsot Mound.
Oh, just Otsot. Because you could, if you're a non-Norwegian speaker, you just go, I wonder what that means. I wonder if it means like sort of cloud of the gods or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, call it
Otsot. It's just some pricks off a pub.
Call it Otsot Mound. Got to be done. Got to be done.
Well, there's a challenge for you, Matt. If you're listening and you feel so inclined, there are many, many stickers in it for you. If you can go through the labyrinthine local government system to rename a Norwegian mountain, or he's just going to, in fact, scribble over the existing sign with a marker.
With Sharpies, yeah. I always go for a.
It's
walk.
Quite a big sign. It's a proper sized sign. It's not just like a little, you know, little note on a stick.
Okay.
It's a proper like a, you know, like a kind of road sign that would show the name of a as you entered a village.
I was going to ask if anyone has ever has anyone been up that mountain that I went up, which isn't a large mountain, which is why I did it only in 2 hours. But if they have done it, but they've kept it authentic to the history books, and they've stayed up there naked with a hammer, just hitting as much as possible so their genitals don't fall off in the cold. Let us know. Send us an email. Not pictures, but just an email, please.
Well, I can't find it now, but somebody in the YouTube comments took great issue with this Welsh legend.
What?
Well, I'm going to have to find this now, aren't I? Scrolling. Scrolling past someone who suggested there should be Group B spec washing machines, massively overpowered and always bursting out of your kitchen wall. Good idea.
That's a great idea.
People give you, there's amazing stuff in the YouTube comments. We should read them out more often. There's somebody who's actually giving me legal property advice based on the fact that their other half is Solicitor Secretary about the stuff that people leave in their house.
Really?
The stained sofa is still here, by the way. Yeah, apparently it's a breach of contract. Anyway. Oh, yeah, here we go. Simon Groot. Hello, Simon. Says exercise of any sort in a cold environment, brackets water, insufficient clothing, etc., is a proven way to hypothermia. To move the muscles requires highly oxygenated blood, which robs the body of core temperature. You will die more quickly with exercise than if you do nothing. Any survival book or medical professional will tell you not to do it. And the best way to survive low temperature environments is to bring all your limbs as close as you can to your body and then wrap any clothing around you. So there we go.
So don't...
Welsh myth busted.
But they
by
didn't.
Simon Groot.
They didn't know this science back then, did they?
No.
They just didn't know that. Well, next time I go there, I'm going to go there fairly soon, I've decided, because I enjoyed it so much. Next time I go up there, I think it's fair to say I'll take a quad. But I will wear clothes, I absolutely promise.
Well, now that's an instant way to get hurt or killed, isn't it? Quad bikes. Well, I mean, it's just death machines.
Okay, so flip a coin. You're either going to go up there naked with a hammer and a selection of things to hit, or you're going to go up there on a quad with no helmet and maybe a sticky throttle.
But I'm allowed to wear clothes.
I think naked quadding is probably...
Naked quadding. I'm just going to read out a comment that was left after Simon's information about core temperature. It's someone called Steve M. Picked up on us talking about garden centres. He just said, you say garden centre, but it's much, much more than that. You can get pets, wicker shit, fragrant candles and some very cheap hardback books, mostly about military history. Good. I think that's a reference to Catterick, the old Rick Reeves Bob Mortimer sitcom.
I might go to a garden centre this weekend. I haven't been for ages. It's a really great place to see people who have a resting smile face. I have talked about resting smile faces before, because some people drive with a resting smile face, not many. So I think a garden centre is good for resting smile faces.
Pop in on your way back from the joust.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, because I might be injured. And
all right, go on your way to the joust then. And
I'd like to go to a garden centre on a horse and tie it up outside next to the motorbikes. It'd be quite cool. Yeah. And then you realise you've bought a massive train.
I don't I don't think I've ever seen a motorbike parked outside a garden centre.
Oh, I have.
I think. Do you think? I think the two things are mutually incompatible.
No.
Motorbike enthusiasm and garden centre
no.
visitation.
No, I've seen them, but they're of a certain breed. They're a faux Harley or a Foley, as I used to call them. They're those Japanese/Chinese bikes which do try to look like Harley Davidsons, but then you suddenly, beneath the veneer, you realise it's a 125 or a 250. Mm. Very much a single cylinder motorbike, and then you go, and it's a little bit too thin and spindly to be
yes,
a Harley.
Yes, yeah, like a bad drawing of a Harley.
Yes,
like a young Harley that hasn't quite sort of grown into itself.
Yet. It's a Bambi Harley with spindlier legs, the thinner body.
Harley. Here we go.
Well, on this
or any other issue, do send in your emails or your pictures, hello@smithandsniff.com, or join our Patreon. And we do enjoy hearing from you, and we do try and reply, even if we're not very good at it. Right, well, that's that for this. Before we go, I have three things to tell you. They are, firstly, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Drake Show, in which Johnny must pick up award-winning rap artist Drake from Luton Airport and get into a concert on time. But because his private jet's been significantly delayed due to an onboard catering issue, he misses his gig.
The Late Drake thank you Show.
Thank you to Kieran Bicknell, who sent that one in. People have started sending in your fake YouTube channels, yes. More of those
I'd love The Late Drake Show. That would be great.
The Late Drake Show would be very stressful, but at the same time, he might just play along with
I
it.
I was expecting
on your jousting horse.
I was worried that my job would be collecting dead ducks off a road, but that's
All right, Johnny's real solo YouTube channel, as you probably know, is called The Late Break Show, and it has many excellent things on it, including tomorrow, if you listen to this on Monday, there will be a review of the new Kia e-Niro.
That's right, the electric Niro.
Not before then, because of the embargo. Second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. One of them is called How to Be a Motoring Journalist by the fictional motoring journalist Roy Lanchester. It's available exclusively from Amazon as an ebook or a paperback. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that the excellent 80s sitcom Ever Decreasing Circles was almost called The Proper Trousers.
Seriously?
Yeah. Alternative title also included Hell's Bells, which you notice Richard Brier's
says all the time.
Says all the time. Ever Decreasing Circles, people, you have to be a certain age and British, I think, to remember it, but it's being rerun now on BBC Four.
Is it?
You can catch them on iPlayer. Yeah, I watched the first episode the other night. It does stand up. It's very funny.
Oh, very Richard Brier's
great setup.
Jolly guy.
Great setup. An incredibly tightly wound man, just driven even more tightly wound by the fact that a very laid-back man moves in next door to him.
That's right.
I mean, it's a bit more complicated than that, but that is the basic premise. It's excellent. Bonus fact, Ever Decreasing Circles was based on a play called Hiccups by the writers of Ever Decreasing Circles. But in the original play, Martin wasn't played by Richard Brier. He was played by Sam Kelly, who is perhaps best known as Captain Gearing from A Low, A Low.
Oh my gosh, you know so much.
And yet so little.
Yes. Well, I have something to say, and that is Smith & Sniff has merchandise available. We say this every episode, but because we've been doing some special edition Father's Day presents/bundles, if you're listening to this on the Monday when it goes out, well, tomorrow, which is the 13th of June, is the last day for second-class postage. So if you're a postage cheapskate, you need to order before then in order to get said items for Father's Day.
Today's the 13th, so it's tomorrow, the 14th. Is Tuesday the 14th is the last
second-class. All right, so 13th is your last day to order Father's Day shizzle.
Today.
Monday.
Okay.
And the 15th is the last day for fast track, expensiver postage. Yeah. So bear that in mind. Go online.
And that's because the 19th, Sunday, is Father's Day.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes,
so,
I knew that.
Merch bundles, T-shirts, mugs,
yeah,
stickers.
Cards.
Father's Day, Smith & Sniff Father's Day cards. All with, if you buy the bundle, a bottle of Brut.
Yeah, so you can smell
or
amazing.
You can buy the cards individually and you can buy the merch, and then obviously there's less sense of urgency if you're just buying it for yourself.
Yeah.
But if you're getting something for Father's Day, which is this coming Sunday, the 19th, get your order in today, 13th.
Yeah.
Or if you're listening to this later in the week, 15th. or if you're listening to this at some point in the future because you're behind on the podcast or you've only just discovered
it's all irrelevant.
26. This is irrelevant. Please ignore this section.
But you can still buy merch, just not Father's Day.
You can still buy merch, and who knows? Yeah. Well, anyway.
So that's that. It's not convoluted at all.
That's that. All done. I think we wrapped that one up very neatly and only about 5 minutes over time. Well, we will be back next week doing this all again. Mm. But until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you and goodbye. And this is Smith and Stiff, a podcast in which two people talk about cars and talking.
Talk about talking. It's Britain's most meta podcast.
Yes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.